the table, the GBM Can 2 hour long arts program here on Radio Blue Mountains 89.1 FM. Our show is made up of two parts. First part is Talking Arts, an interview program where we talk to artists and cultural workers in the Blue Mountains, and then Blue Mountains Live, where we have interviews with artists who are performing in the Blue Mountains over the weekend, and also we play some music from local artists, and we talk to venue owners and event organisers, etc. But tonight we've got a pretty full program of interviews, so there won't be a lot of directory news. We've got a couple of long interviews. First one is with John Daly here on Talking Arts, and John is the last of our series of exhibitors who are out at Gang Gang Gallery for the Hands on Clay exhibition, Hands on Clay 2024, the fourth iteration thereof. And we have quite a long interview with him. And then after that, we have an interview with Lisa Finn Powell, who's ex-alumni Radio Blue Mountains. She used to do a show, a travel show here with Fran Kane on RBM. And she's been working down the Joan for the last year down in Penrith. But she's doing her last day today. And so we picked up with her for an interview to find out what's happening with Lisa, and also we'll briefly talk about what's happening down at the Joan over the weekend. And so stay tuned. After a promo or two, we'll get into it with John Daly from Hands on Clay. And you're with the Professor on Radio Blue Mountains 89.1 FM.
This is Talking Arts, our weekly focus on a wide array of art forms hosted by the Professor every Thursday from 6.
Located in the heart of the Blue Mountains, Magpie Upstyle Markets at Lawson is a mixed market with food and artisans, clothing, hats, timberwork, paintings, flowers, retro goods and jewellery. It's located at Lawson Public School on the third Sunday of every month with ample street parking and easy access to trains. For inquiries, ring 0414 733 400. Magpie Upstyle Markets is not just for the birds.
Experience Nocturnal at Scenic World these school holidays. As the sun sets, jump aboard the world's steepest train to explore the Lunar Light Journey. Along the rainforest boardwalk, you'll find illuminated native creatures and magical light installations. Take a quest to unlock the Gundungurra creation story. Then float amongst the stars on the Skyway cable car and finish with marshmallows toasted on an open fire. Nocturnal at Scenic World, after dark from April 5 to May 4. Book now at scenicworld.com.au.
Blue Mountains Air are friendly, reliable and local. And Deedon, the owner, is keen to keep your home warm and provide all your air conditioning repairs and replacements. What better incentive to ring him on 0420 704 907 sooner rather than later?
Hello and welcome to Talking Arts here on Radio Blue Mountains on the GBM Can 2 hour arts program called The Table. In our series of interviews with people who are exhibiting down at Gang Gang Gallery for Hands on Clay 2024, the fourth iteration thereof, I have another special guest. We're up to about 10 or so people so far from the exhibition, and I've been meaning to talk to John from right at the beginning, but we've only just got round to it. But that's good timing, because John has his Artist Day coming up this weekend. So we welcome John Daly to the program. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, as I said, you're one of the exhibitors down at Hands on Clay. And, of course, we did early on in the piece talk to your father. Do you often exhibit with your father?
Oddly, no. We work together. We have we share a studio on our property in Cowra. So
right.
We sort of have other ends of the studio separated by the kiln room.
Right.
This would be the first time we've exhibited together. And Also, we've just opened a joint exhibition in Melbourne, which is currently on as well. So it's been a very busy time.
Right. Yeah. Now, we do, as I said, we talked to Greg. I didn't actually talk to him. One of our reporters talked to him and did an interview with him. And as one of the first ones for the exhibition, he mentioned working with you a little bit, but not very much. So it's good that we're catching up. So what I might do is get a bit of a background from you. A lot of our listeners won't know about your work and how it ties in with your dad's, so maybe just a bit of background as to where you trained and I suppose also where you grew up. Are you from?
I'm from Cowra.
Right.
My mother's family have been there for many generations, and dad's originally from Melbourne. I think I started working with dad when I was about 3 or 4 years old. I was helping him with glaze testing and would come up and play around at the studio and, you know, make terrible lumpy pots. But it was always a lot of fun just to sort of go and explore the world of clay up at the pottery and kind of get immersed in it. But I ended up running away from the circus and went and studied environmental science and geology at the ANU in Canberra.
Right.
And then somehow managed to get sucked back in. I think towards the end of my life in academia, my hands were sort of itching to touch clay again and be a bit more creative and hands-on. And so I did one elective in ceramics in my last semester, and it just reminded me how much I'd missed it.
Right. But, I mean, you would have have to be getting regular reminders. They sit in lectures on igneous rocks, I suppose. So.
Yeah, yes, and how they decompose down to clays as well. So
yes.
Whenever we did a sedimentology lecture, it was the clay bit was rather front of mind.
Right.
But it was nice to sort of get a bit of a background on the ceramics as well.
But lecturers then wondering why is John sad at the end of my lecture?
Yes. Well, there was one subject when we were doing a research topic on petrology, and we're looking at thin pieces of rock under a microscope, a rather fancy microscope, and I brought in samples of dad's glaze tests.
Oh, right.
And and was looking at that under the microscope as well, and having a much more exciting time than trying to study the rocks and work out their formation history.
Right. But I imagine,
yeah.
I mean, we're gonna at that point we could leap ahead to your waste to art practice at the moment, where you're melting down glass and other materials and found objects and things like that to create glazes, as opposed to go and ripping them out of the earth. So I imagine the knowledge that you gained from studying helped in knowing how to do that, knowing when something might work and when something won't, you know.
Yeah, and it's a combination of things. It's the it's having a bit of an understanding of the chemistry of glazes and what different components will do in a glaze at those sort of high temperatures, and how to how to work with that. But then also how to sort of systematically test something and not be too surprised when something happens. You know, you think, oh, I want to try and get this to work. How do I go about starting to understand it? It sort of ends up being quite a sort of a scientific process of controlling variables and isolating the effect of one thing that it might be having on the glaze. And it's definitely not necessary to have studied science to do ceramics, but it, in many ways, it does help, and it helps to just sort of guide you through the complexity and the uncertainty, and make sense of some of those sort of serendipitous results that come out of the kiln when you just start mixing bits and bobs together. And my new work kind of goes away from using sort of virgin materials, which
right. I did jump the gun a little bit there. So maybe take us through the process of how you made that transition from just going down the shop and buying all the materials to hunting around in landfills looking for things.
Well, I suppose part of the my study was environmental science, and start thinking rather critically about your impact on the world and the environment around you and the sort of larger Earth system as a whole. And although the effects of the efforts of one person might seem like a drop in the ocean, I feel like every little bit counts. And when I was Dad's studio is a it's almost a storehouse of all possible materials known to man, and
right
when it comes to making glazes. But it's something that started to not sit quite right for me when it came to just thoughtlessly using new materials and having some understanding about where these materials came from and the energy and the impact that mining these materials has. And yet also surrounded by so many waste things, and thinking, well, the whole process of ceramics is this kind of transformational thing. You manipulate clay to form a pot, and then you're transforming all of these materials in the kiln at a high temperature, and they're processes that are used in industry for recycling and for reuse, and why not see if I can find a way of reusing materials that would otherwise either go to waste or if they're lucky enough to be captured by a recycling process, they would get recycled into new material. Why not try and do that in my work as well? So there's been an interesting process of working out ways of finding materials that have all the chemistry and the properties that you would normally look for in a glaze, but that come from a waste source. I feel like I'm very, very, I'm at the beginning of that process.
Right.
I'm literally only using three materials. I'm using waste clay from Dad's ceramic practice.
Yep.
Which potters have reclaimed their clay turnings for a millennia. When you're making work that's sort of so perfect and can't have any sort of imperfections the way that Dad does, it's a bit hard to use that sort of reclaimed clay because it might have impurities that affect the result, and it's not what he's looking for. So I've been reclaiming the clay, and there's quite a backlog of bins of clay that I can tap into.
But in that reclamation, I mean, how to the untrained brain, most people would think, well, you just, if you're heating things up to a high temperature, then that's like smelting. That's like where the imperfections rise to the top, you scrape them off, and then you've got a pure material. I imagine with fired clay, it's not the same sort of direct process.
No, as the temperature increases, it sort of starts to react in interesting ways. Minerals decompose, the chemistries from different materials start to combine and form new materials at these sort of high temperatures. A pot starts off as clay, which is a layered aluminosilicate mineral, and at about between about 500 and 800 degrees, it starts to form into ceramic, which is a completely different material. And that process is irreversible.
Yeah.
You can't turn it back to clay again. But the ceramic itself is this more glassy, amorphous, vitrified material that has different properties, and it makes a beautiful pot to eat off or look at or whatever. And part of that, and that sort of transformational process sort of combines things in new and exciting ways. So I've also been working with recycled glass. I had a broken window in my house one day that in a storm, a branch came through and smashed a window. And instead of going, oh, well, I'll just scoop all this up and take it to the tip, I thought, well, surely I can do something with this. This is a really beautiful material that can be crushed up, ground up to a pint powder, and mixed with a little bit of the clay to change the melt characteristics, a little bit of other materials to add colour to it. And so it sort of started from there, really. And the colour I found, I remember walking around and found a twisted bit of copper pipe in the paddock one day. And
yep.
I thought, well, we use copper all the time to get colour in glazes. It has this wide range of colours that it can create. It's turquoise when fired under an oxidation firing, where it's sort of nice clean heat, but no sort of smoke or material like unburnt gas that can try and looking for oxygen. But then if you add that extra gas or let's say, you know, a smoky wood firing or something, you can create reducing characteristics which reduce the copper oxide to a different form, and it creates this red color.
Right.
And that's a very common copper red glazes are a common stoneware glaze.
Yep.
And you can play around with it at low temperature as well to get some really strikingly different results. So just those three materials, the clay, the glass, and the ground up powdered copper from the twisted pipe, what I've started with. And I still haven't quite found the limit of all the possibilities with that.
Right,
it's amazing how it's sort of, you know, it's a
fair expulsion of energy, though, to ground up something to glass or copper or whatever. So do you have like mechanical things that you're using at home to do that? Or?
A little bit. A lot of what I did to begin with was just literally crushing up by hand.
Right.
Creating I made a glass crusher out of an old bit of pipe and a big heavy rod of metal, and would sort of load the glass in and crush it up by hand. It was a lot of work. It was quite a nice thing to do, exhausting, but a sort of, you know, it's a bit like an atonement for all that kind of just thoughtless usage of material. It's like, okay, well, you've got to learn that these materials don't happen by chance. You
know, of course. I was taking note for every sort of artist in the mountains when you said, oh, yes, I'm doing this as an atonement. I saw that in your notes. And I'm thinking, well, I hope he also then manages to sell the work rather than it just being, you know, sort of a self-flagellation. For his art. I thought it's a little bit early Catholic for the artwork. You know, it's I hope people are appreciating the amount that John is suffering for his art. So.
Oh, but even so, I think it's I enjoy the process, and more recently I have made it a little bit easier on myself by buying a little mini rock crusher that can that takes some of that energy out.
Yes, well done.
But and actually, talking about the energy, it's like part of the reason why I wanted to work with glass rather than crushed up rock.
Because
you know, another option would be to find, you know, rock dust from
different minerals,
industrial processes, and you know, it's often just a waste that has to be gotten rid of. All of those materials fire at a much higher temperature,
right?
Whereas glass already has chemicals in there which
assist in
those fluxes that lower that melting temperature and require a lot less energy to fire. So I can fire at what's called earthenware temperatures, which is around about 1,080 degrees Celsius. It still seems like a very hot environment, but it's much lower than the 1200, 1300 designed to lower the melting point of the silica in the glass. So it requires a lot less energy to do what's called an earthenware firing to about 1000 or 1080 degrees Celsius. Whereas stoneware glazes, which are made of crushed up rocks and mixed together in various proportions, are often around about sort of 1280 degrees Celsius.
Right.
And that 200 extra degrees makes quite a lot of difference to the amount of energy required.
Right.
It can be sometimes close to twice as much energy just to get that last 200 degrees.
Right.
So I like the idea of working with glass as a glaze material, because it means you don't have to use as much energy.
Right. And, it's a bit more forgiving as far as
Yeah.
Using up the energy of the planet. So.
Yeah. And, you know, there's definitely more sustainable energy sources. If you can find a sustainable source of wood, that's one option. Solar energy or hydro energy, if you're firing an electric kiln. And that, gas is a little bit more challenging. You know, most of the gas that we use is natural gas or LPG. But there's what's been exciting me over the last year or so is the potential of biogas. We have a project that's sort of slowly getting off the ground in Cowra around biodigestion of organic waste streams.
Right.
And that's produced that has the potential to produce an enormous amount of biogas, which is basically methane and a little bit of carbon dioxide from the biological breakdown of organic waste, and that can be captured and stored as an energy material and distributed through the natural gas network or bottled. And so I'm rather hoping that in the next couple of years I'll be able to be firing all my gas kilns on biogas.
Right,
and it's completely, you know, carbon neutral energy source.
Right, yeah, brilliant. Okay, so that's a good segue to just touch on your setup at home before we've been asking everybody how they work and what they've got set up as far as their studio and the kilns go. So, what have you and Dad got at home there on the property?
Well, Dad came from Melbourne back in the 80s when I was born, and was used to having a very large studio where he could have all his materials and equipment. And so when he moved up to the farm, he built an enormous shed. It's this, I can't think of how long it is, but it's probably close to sort of two or three basketball courts in size.
Right.
And he has one half where he makes all his work. My mother took over the other half. She was also a potter for a long time, and then it's moved more into teaching art classes and also farming. So her end has kind of become this multi-purpose space of, you know, farm storage and a bit of woodworking with me as I was a kid, and now doing ceramics, you know, in my spare time. And then those two studios are separated by the kiln room, where there's about, I think at last count, 10 kilns.
No, good heavens.
About 4 or 5 electric kilns and 5 gas kilns.
Right.
And
good heavens.
You know, the kilns seem to come and go a bit every now and again. And when Dad's looking for something, a different result, he built a little test kiln with a window in it one year. And he was researching what he uses now, which is luster glazes. They get reduced at a low temperature, about 700 degrees after the main glaze firing, and it's a process that happens within minutes. The glaze completely changes color as you're doing the reduction firing, and he wanted to be able to sort of visualize that, so he built a kiln with a window in it to test it and take photos, and it's pretty amazing to see that happen in front of your eyes.
Right.
Mm.
Okay, so so now we should then move to today and to the current exhibition. So how many pieces do you have in the exhibition down at Gangang?
I think there's about 7, I would say.
Right.
They're a mixture of sort of vase forms. I think there might be a few bowl shapes, and they're quite organic in a weird way. They're structured but organic.
Well, I saw the picture that was on the post, the most recent post, where there's a picture of you as well, with some of the pots. Are they the ones from the exhibition?
Ooh, I haven't seen that post. That post might be from a few years ago, with a sort of a whole selection of pots that I've done over the years.
Right, right.
But the works in the show are. They're quite textured.
Conch shells, and other ones looked like you know, vases with bandages wrapped around them. So
yeah,
it sort of had that sort of, you know, slightly textured and sort of little bit chaotic sort of look to them. So
yeah, they the process is quite sort of interesting. What, to get that gritty texture on the outside, you can't really throw it in the way that you would normally throw a pot with your hand on the outside and the inside sort of forming clay.
Right.
On the wheel. It's I start off with a fairly simple cylindrical shape and then cut all this texture into it using a loop cutting tool.
Right.
And then throw the pot out to sort of create that, you know, the full form of the pot.
Just
throwing from the inside.
Right.
So it's this quite, normally you're able to sort of push and pull the clay around with both hands and sort of balance out the tension. But in this case, it's, you just have to do everything from the inside with one hand. And it's,
right.
You know, early on when I was playing around with the technique, it was you know, a lot of failures. It's easy to push too hard and go.
I was going to say, I'm just thinking of the few times I got onto a potter's wheel when I was studying art, and it was always that was like the norm for me, trying to manipulate it, and it just sort of going off all over the place, you know.
And it's less about like forcing the pot into a particular shape. It's almost sort of an encouragement and working, feeling how the clay wants to move, how it
right, but the, still being able to control that and not have it just all go awry is, I imagine, quite a skill.
It's this sort of feeling of indirect pressure.
Yeah,
You're not directly forming a surface. You're kind of pushing somewhere else, like the inside of the pot, and letting the outside express itself.
Right.
And there's this, because clay is, it's both like elastic but also has a sort of brittleness to it. You know, if stretched, it'll sort of, it can be quite short, and it sort of breaks up into little pieces.
Yeah.
The texture that I originally cut into the clay, and it's a thick cylinder, looks very fluid and sort of wet and gloopy. And then as you stretch it, it almost starts to look drier and more rock-like. Going back to my geology training, it's interesting to think about how those stresses are presenting themselves in the clay, because it's similar to how rocks deform.
Earth formation, yeah.
Over a millennia, and there's this particular thing that happens in, it's a type of way that rock deforms in structural geology, that where you have soft rock on either side of a really brittle rock.
Right.
And as it gets pulled apart, the brittle rock breaks up into little chunks.
Yeah.
And the soft rock, kind of relatively soft, it's not like it's ice cream. It sort of flows.
But it moves. It's a bit more
around
fluid.
All the chunks of the other rock. And it's a sim. It's called boudinage. And it when I was throwing the pots, I sort of saw a process quite similar to that. There were these areas with sort of high points that had maybe dried out a bit quicker than everything else, and they were starting to break up, and the softer clay was sort of forming around it. And it was interesting to sort of see the parallels between the geological process happening.
But be able to stand there and watch a process happening, which is similar to something that normally takes millennia.
Yeah, I almost want to, go back and demonstrate this to geology students and sort of see it.
Right.
It would have been so much really helpful for me to sort of visualize that.
Yes, of course, and a lot more fun.
And messy as well.
Yes, of course. And that's part of the fund as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant, excellent. Okay, well, what we will now suggest is that people are obviously going to be sitting there fascinated by this, as I am. If you want to, you can continue listening to John talk about this work, because John is actually having his Artist Day this Sunday down at Gangang Gallery, 206 Main Street in Lithgow. On the 21st, I think, Sunday, yes.
Yeah,
And so you're going to be there all day, John, like from about 10 till 4 or so? It's the norm, I think.
It's from 10 till 4 from memory. And I'll be there. I love chatting with people about it, and I'm happy to answer all questions. And, It'd be wonderful to see a few people there.
And for housekeeping, the exhibition is called Hands on Clay 2024. It's the fourth iteration thereof. Have you ever been in any other Hands on Clays, Jim?
No, I haven't.
This is your first one.
I've seen a couple of the previous ones.
Right.
Driving through there.
Yep. Great. And it's on all of April, so it's on until the 28th. But obviously, we've only got about a week and a half left now. Did you go to the opening, Jim?
I wasn't able to, unfortunately. I had to go down to Melbourne.
Right.
A bit busy life, but I'm really looking forward to seeing everything in the gallery this Sunday.
As should everybody, John. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
No, it's been fascinating, been brilliant. So I've always been, I'm an illustrator, blah, 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 but I've always been interested in ceramics, and my wife's brother, who sadly passed away, he was a brilliant potter. Whenever there is a ceramics show on out at Gangang, we're always very excited and interested. We've got some wonderful ceramicists in the Seven Valleys and in the Blue Mountains. So it's always a pleasure when these group shows get together.
It's an amazing hotbed of ceramics knowledge around the Blue Mountains.
Yep, and but also the bigger picture of the bigger exhibition at Gulgong, and that's going on at the moment. It's
the Gulgong Clay Gulgong conference is starting this week.
Yep.
Starting today.
Yeah. No, there you go.
Yeah.
Very timely. Excellent. Okay, now, as I do with every interviewee, John, I'm going to ask you for a musical reference as we go out. Do you listen to music in the studio when you're working?
I do sometimes. I think podcasts are probably my main go-to, but sometimes you just need to sort of switch off that information side of your brain and just feel some emotions and feel the music.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to make any rock puns, but is there a particular genre or performer or band that you you'd like to have us
recently
play?
I've been listening to the work of Hany Arany. She's a Polish pianist and composer.
All right.
Came out to Australia last year and did her debut show in Orange, New South Wales.
All right.
And I went along and with no expectations and was utterly blown away. She's an amazing performer and just incredible sort of modern classical music. And I just remember one stage she was literally playing three pianos at once: a grand piano, an upright piano, and a synthesizer all at the same time.
Right.
It was stunning to watch her play. And it really puts you into an amazing sort of ethereal mood.
Right,
listening to her work.
Right, brilliant. Excellent. Well, we'll find one of her pieces. And as I said, thank you so much for coming on. And I hope Sunday goes well.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Brilliant. Thanks, John.
My pleasure.
This is Talking Arts, our weekly focus on a wide array of art forms hosted by the Professor every Thursday from 6.
Are you struggling to save for your first home deposit? If you don't want to wait years to buy a home, Afford Assist can offer 1% deposit home loan. Its innovative deferred deposit solution makes it possible to secure a loan, buy with an initial part deposit, defer and pay the balance of the deposit without interest. A home loan with an Afford Assist deferred deposit can reduce mortgage stress by reducing the loan amount and thousands on interest payments. Call Anthony on 1800 961 108 or visit affordassist.com and let us assist you to buy your first home.
Ready to give your home a fresh look? Easy View Blinds is here to help. Since 1995, we've been the go-to for top-notch window furnishings in Lithgow and the Blue Mountains. From timeless classics like verticals and Venetians to sleek modern options like panel glides and honeycomb blinds, we've got it all. We'll come to you, measure your windows, and chat about the perfect fit, all at no cost or commitment. Want to expand your outdoor space? Well, then check out Zip Screen, crafted right here in Australia. Worried about bushfires? We've got you protected with Bell 40 and Bell FZ shutters. Don't wait. Call Easy View Blinds now on 6351 2518 or visit us at 52 Enfield Avenue, Lithgow. Easy View Blinds, where your windows meet style and affordability.
Hello and welcome back to Talking Arts. And we heard there about what's going on with the exhibition that we've been doing a series on, and that's the exhibition out at Gang Gang Gallery for Hands on Clay. That was John Daly, and so and he's appearing this weekend with his talk down at the gallery. But I was going to do another Hands on Clay exhibition interview, but something has happened that has made us all very sad, and because of that, I thought it was very important for us to make sure we did the next interview on this episode, and that's with Lisa Finn Powell. Now, Lisa, we were intending to have as a monthly guest on the show to talk about the Penrith arts scene and about the Joan and the performing arts and visual arts centre down there, and it's all not going to happen now because, very sadly, Lisa won't be working at the Joan anymore. Apart from all that, welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you.
I started to depress myself there, so I thought. It's Lisa's last day today, in fact, down at the Joan. Initially, as I said, we're all very sad up here, and so condolences, Lisa, from Radio Blue Mountains and all the crew, who some of whom you used to work with up here. Now, I must say, I didn't say it before off air, but I will say it on air, is hopefully you're going to stay within the arts, within media. You were mentioning some things you're doing for the Penrith region down there, but I'm hoping you're going to still have a finger in the pie as far as media goes and things like that. And I'm going to suggest that maybe we keep you on the program once a month.
I'd love to.
I'm hoping that is also an incentive for you to keep your ear to the ground and be a regional reporter for us for the Penrith region, or even anywhere as far as what's on and different things. Because I'm sure you're not going to drop all of those contacts and skills that you've developed over the last year down at the Joan.
Well, no, obviously, you know, I've been in media, I've had a tandem career in media and music for ever. Maybe I won't quantify that, just to keep a mystery around it, but a long time. So, you know, that's just where my heart is. And, you know, more recently in the last decade or whatever, well, since I've come to Australia, like I've lived in Western Island in the mountains actually, but, you know, I've been advocating for, you know, the prosperity of the region. as I am on the Penrith Chamber Board and then with my role at PPBA. And, you know, working really hard in that space, advocacy and awareness. And, you know, I never had that Penrith or more the Western Sydney kind of stigma because I didn't grow up here. And I recognized it kind of the moment we got here in 2014. And I didn't have to really play along with it because I said, oh, I don't know about that. I'm not part of that world because I didn't grow up here. So I got to skip over that in some ways. But I have really been part of a lot of teams of people who are working to better the region. And Women Out West, the show that I produced, it was a talk series and presented at the Joan. It was, you know, championing and recognizing the amazing women that live or have a connection to Western Sydney and Blue Mountains. And there are many, there are millions. There's so many great, amazing people that live quietly around here.
Well, I think the thing that never changes is your philosophy, is your connection to the genres, is and not necessarily a location thing. I grew up in the sort of northern suburbs of Sydney, Hornsby. I was born and raised in Hornsby, lived there for many years, then moved to the eastern suburbs when I left home and things like that. But during all that time, I'm involved with the arts, I'm involved with theatre, I'm an illustrator, I was a musician, blah, blah, blah. And I think you carry that with you. It doesn't really matter where you are. So it's a thing. And I lived in Lane Cove for a long time, and that was a village suburb and lots of community and things like that. But I never quite connected there, even though I was, you know, but I was working at the ABC, I was playing bands, blah, 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 and I still kept that all with me. But, of course, moving up to the Blue Mountains, I arrived here and instantly connected with the people who were up here because they were of the same mindset, they were of the similar backgrounds and blah, blah, blah. And so found a home in that sense. It was still, you know, kept up the same sort of approach, the same sort of thing, wanting to help bring the community together and highlight those arts areas of the community that were getting neglected and getting not enough funding to segue to, you know, what I wanted to talk about today with you is the reason, of course, is that the funding's been cut down at the Joan, down at the Performing Arts Centre, and that has resulted in you not having the position down there. But as we were saying off air, we should highlight the great things that you've done while you've been down there, the skills that you've learned, and the programs that you've pushed, because it all contributes. It's all worthwhile.
Yeah, and I mean, amazing things will still go on and are still going on with the Joan and Penrith Regional Gallery. And, you know, as with most of the arts, like, we have to be funded to put on the programs. And the economic landscape of state funding, there's a great big disparity between how much money goes to Western Sydney, Blue Mountains area, and how much goes to, you know, Sydney, Eastern Sydney. Yeah, and it's quite huge. So there was a report that came out last year, that State of the Arts report, and it did quite a lot of research. It wasn't a great big surprise. It was Western Sydney Creative Center for Western Sydney, great big research project, and Business Western Sydney, and it wasn't a surprise, but it's just really hard to see the things in numbers, and it's a slow burn, and I feel like it's on the up, but
obviously it's the evidence is that in your case it's not on the up, so you're suffering the effects of that, whether it's a delayed effect or not, or whether it's something that brings it to the forefront for a lot of people.
And we weren't the only ones, I should say, you know.
Oh, right.
The state government funding kind of went a different direction this year and funded in a different way. And it just came as a great big surprise. So there are other small to medium-sized arts organizations who also didn't get that state funding. But
right.
Obviously we get funding from lots of different places.
Yeah.
But this was a big enough whack to cause a great big dent and have, you know, we then had to scramble and, you know, regroup and figure some things out, how to operate in a different way. And
right.
I mean, it's really kind of the nature of arts in a lot of ways because we...
Yeah. Well, I think with a lot of us are finding out that you either just keep going, whether the funding's there or not, and just hope that the funding once again catches up with you at some point. But a lot of people are suggesting that some of the reason that the arts got a little bit of a stimulus recently was post sort of disasters and COVID is where the government felt obliged to throw some funding into the arts because of that. So we had, you know, we have recovery funds for the bushfires up here and things like that.
Of course, yeah.
But now after post that, when they're trying to then work into infrastructure and repair roads and pay for things that have happened because of climate change and different other things, other factors, disaster repair and blah, 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 some of that funding is just not available there for the arts.
Yeah.
And also people's personal funding is not available either. You know, they haven't got money to spend on going to theatre and going to perform.
Well, now people don't. That's true. I mean, this is kind of, you know, it just is a perfect storm, you know, because it's on the heels of the pandemic where there was some, you know, financial assistance for people. And that was the kind of beginning of, you know, audiences sort of becoming much more careful and not booking or booking really, really late. And so, you know, obviously arts and recreation type things are the first thing you kind of cream off the top. But, you know, if we're going to support the growth of the region, we have to look around and decide what's important. And, you know, we want it to be a place to live, work, and play. And we need to have cultural opportunities that are accessed here in Western Sydney. We need to have programs that we can bring to our community free. You know, talks and music and theater. And there's so many things that we can do that we can bring a vibrancy of, you know, an economy that means we don't have to get on the train and go anywhere because we have the talent here and we have the energy here. And, you know, now we're going to have the growth that is coming along, whether we like it or not, as a result of the airport, and we will have more people in the region, and we have a lot to offer. We have so much to offer, and I believe in it so much, and will continue to sort of shout wherever that's possible. And of course, you know, these things don't grow and thrive on energy alone. They need money. And, you know, just like anything does. And there's a lot on the cards. You know, we have a lot of spaces, you know, green spaces and health and roads and transport, all these things that we're trying to do to grow the region, which actually, you know, it's grown so much in the decade that I've been here.
Right.
Just changed so much in the time that I've been here. And I feel really kind of like protective over it in a weird way, you know, and you know, the Blue Mountains with the just natural like beauty and grandeur. And I remember the first time I was taken up to Katoomba, I think this was like 2006, And no one ever told me that there were mountains. I have this, you know, obviously stereotypical kind of like, Australia, there'll be sharks swimming down the street, you know, snakes, etc. You know, I had all of that.
Yeah, but, you know, most of the time they don't show mountains in ads for Australia. Yeah. They show rolling plains with kangaroos jumping along and
that's right.
You know, long, long country roads, and it's all flat, you know, so.
Yeah. But I was absolutely just astounded and anyway, gravitated toward the mountains for many reasons. It just is like a spiritual home for a lot of people, as we know. Yeah. Like, and yeah, there's just so much here. And on the one hand, you're a bit like, ooh, do we want to tell everybody? And then on the other hand, it's like, oh, okay, we want to celebrate all that's good about it. So, you know, fine line, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we're probably starting to wax lyrical about what's going on. I think what we should do is emphasise 2 points. One is that to support and continue supporting is for audiences, number one, bums on seats, guys. That's what really, really matters, is that people will take more attention if we support by just going to the events, and if even if it's being selective and picking out the cheap or the free ones, just
yeah,
keep
we have
the
so many
keep
of the those.
Yeah, I mean keep the
and we're proud to deliver those. We want to deliver those to the community.
So and that's of course the second part is we'll keep supporting, we'll keep promoting, we'll keep trying to keep the stuff alive, keep the music alive, keep the arts alive.
Yeah.
And as I said, we're going to put Lisa on the spot each month into the future. Even though she's not down at the Jones, she'll be around. She'll be combing the streets and keeping her eye out. So I'm hoping that she'll take us up on that offer.
Absolutely. I would absolutely love to.
Okay. And so I will put you on the spot. So since we're not going to break tradition there, and we're going to keep you on as our media reporter for the Blue Mountains, but also mainly for the Penrith region down the hill to know what's going on in some of those other places, we'll get you to do a quick report now. If you want to do one for the Joan, that'd be great. If you don't, if you want to just give us a general overview of what you know is happening down
yes.
in Penrith and blah blah blah, what's happening, please?
Well, okay, so I'll start with the gallery, because I'll just refresh your memory that the gallery has 4 major exhibitions usually a year, kind of seasonally, right? So at the moment there are different little gallery spaces there, so when you go there you need to wander around and make sure you're getting into all the spaces, because it was a former home, and there's like a house that has some space and another room and the main gallery. So at the moment we have 3 exhibitions on, and those are always free. And then, you know, obviously there's music in the gardens. We have Twilight that happens once a month. That's free. You can get, you know, food and drink at the wonderful cafe at Lures there, which is award-winning and wonderful. And at the moment, and as always, we have art classes for children and adults. We have them during term time. We have them right now during the summer. And they're still available right now. So Penrith Regional Gallery, always a great place to go and to explore, to relax, to have a drink, to hang out. Great vibe, and lots of interesting art and classes. So that's the gallery. Then at the Joan, we have Open Fridays. I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but Open Fridays is live and local music. So for example, we've got live and local music happening tomorrow with Jimmy Carr, and it's in
Borland.
Yeah, it's in our Borland Lounge, and it's free. You just come on in and have a drink and hang out. And the idea was a kind of an after work on Friday thing. However, sometimes there's something else going on that evening, so you can come in early and then you can have a drink and listen to some music, and then you can go into a show. I don't think there's anything else on that night, but a lot of Fridays there are. There's also an Art Attack heart attack. I really love that saying. We have lots of different art classes on, and like tonight, I think they're doing macrame mug rug. I don't know what to say about that. So many cool things, and they book out. Those you do pay for because of the supplies and the teacher. There are lots of talks. There are monthly morning melodies. There's obviously we've got the hilarious Wharf Review. If you've not been to a Wharf Review, these guys are political satire, and they really push the window and are quite funny. So I would make time in your life for that. We all need to laugh a little bit about the world, what's going on in the world. And then we always have kids shows. Great kids shows about the Peasant Prince coming up. And we've got Penrith Symphony Orchestra. We have a youth orchestra as well. And we have different orchestra shows. So there's classical music, there's popular music. We've got Kate Heidke coming, but I think she's sold out. And, you know, just keep an eye, because there's a load of amazing things that go on at the Joan. And you don't have to get on the train and go all the way into the city. That's my theory on that one. You can just drive down, have a place to park, have some dinner. And then you're home with a cup of tea by about 10:30. Doesn't that sound good?
Brilliant. Yeah. Excellent.
I don't know. Maybe that's me being old, but boy, does that sound good.
Yeah. Excellent.
But yeah, there's so much on it. I'm really happy to report on it regionally. And that's so funny that you say that, because I was thinking about that. Like, there's so much on.
Well, this is it. And I mean, there's no reason we shouldn't keep you on and keep you VSAP reports. But you can now obviously expand it. Beyond you know, the Penrith Arts Centre and the Joan, blah blah blah. I mean, it's great to then hear about other things from up here leaking down there, of course, because Jimmy Carr's a friend of the show, and I was going to, of course, once again ask you about a musical reference going out, but I think we'll play some Jimmy Carr.
I want to
do
this, absolutely.
We'll definitely play Come On Over, which we play quite often from his Flight Cycle album. But we love Jimmy, so yeah.
That's so good.
So once again, thank you so much for coming on, Lisa. So sorry to hear about the job, but hopefully it's going to give you the opportunity to go on to bigger and better things. And yes. And you won't be a stranger around here, because we'll have you on.
No, I'm living here, so.
Quite regularly.
Can't get rid of me.
That's it. Okay, and yeah, good luck. I hope that, you know, maybe you keep producing shows that can be possibly shown at the Joan, and that they give you a bit of an in because of the past work. But of course, you can now charge them full producer rates rather than giving them an in-house discount.
Yes, there's that.
But I think they should give you some points for giving them a good send-off as well. So, if any of those things down at the Joan interest you, do go to the website for the Joan. We will continue to keep you updated as to what Lisa is up to next.
Fabulous. Sounds great. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Good chat as usual.
All right. Thanks, Lisa. And here's Jimmy Carr with Come On Over.
He's got more contacts in the music and events game than you've had hot dinners. It's Brad the Professor Diedrich on Blue Mountains Live.
Hey, I saw you hiding out. I thought that we were past that. Why don't you come on over and take a little chance? Communicate, work it out. I don't mean you any harm. I hope that you can see. You come on over, take a little chance, communicate, and work it out. Communicate, and work it out. I love you, even when you will not take my calls. I see you, even when you're putting up your walls. I need you, even when your words don't come out straight. Come on over, it out. I see you running around at night. You must be looking for a fight. Why don't you come on over, take a look around, communicate, work it out. I did not come to talk trash, and I don't want to steal your stash. Why don't you come on over, take a little chance, communicate, and work it out. Communicate, and work it out. I love you, even when you will not take my call. I see you, even when you're putting up your walls.
Get out.